It is a State Capitol Report on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The nonpartisan grassroots political organization League of Women Voters of Wisconsin, they conducted a survey to hear from voters about the experience of casting a ballot during this month's general election. According to the Wisconsin Elections Commission, turnout was higher than most midterms, but did not exceed 2018 levels. Unofficially, roughly 57% of Wisconsin's eligible voters cast a ballot, compared to 2018, when turnout hit a record 59%. Join in on your experience at the polls, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Eileen Newcomer is Voter Education Manager for the League of Women Voters of Wisconsin. Eileen, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me back. I'm really glad to be with you all this morning.
Well, let's dig into the survey. The League typically completes a survey on voter experiences after elections, and hundreds of people took the survey for the midterms. What are some of your biggest takeaways?
Yeah, so we are still actively collecting responses to the survey, but you're exactly right. We've already had hundreds of people respond, and I'm happy to share some of kind of our preliminary results and things that we have heard from voters so far. And one thing that I always take away from these surveys is if you ask people, especially to like kind of give open-ended answers, we get just so much variation between voter to voter because we're all very unique individuals. And so one of my top line takeaways is from our question that we asked voters, which method did they vote, whether voting by mail or absentee by mail, early voting in person, or on election day in person. And it's really telling to me that, you know, we asked that question, everyone gave us a different response. And so to me, the takeaway is a reminder that voting is not one size fits all. And it's important that we have these different options for people to meet their lived reality. So for example, one of the responses we received for why somebody voted early was because they had surgery. And so they didn't know if they'd be able to go to the polls on November 8th. And so they wanted to plan ahead and take advantage of early voting. And so that's why they chose to vote that way. And then what's also kind of interesting is people may have like the same reason for why they choose to vote a certain method, but it actually leads them to kind of a different conclusion. Hmm. So what do I mean by that? Some people say like, I wanna make absolutely sure that my ballot gets counted and casted. And so for one person, that means I'm voting absentee by mail because it gives me the flexibility that I need in order to do the research on the candidates and make sure that I take the time to turn my ballot in and have it counted. And for other people, that means I'm showing up on election day to make sure that I physically put my ballot into the tabulator, get my I voted sticker, and be part of that community feeling of voting on election day as well.
This is so interesting. What do you do with these survey results? Where do they go?
Yeah, so after most elections, we put together a post-election report. We use information from the survey and then also information that we get from our election observers. So they're trained volunteers that go across the state to different polling places. They look out for what's going well, what's not going well. Are people being turned away? Why are they being turned away? And we compile all of this information into a report that just discusses, you know, what was the reality on the ground here in Wisconsin? And if there are statewide takeaways, we definitely like include that, but then also get down to community specific information to kind of just document what happened. And then also we put together a list of recommendations based on the information that we have, which we use to not only inform our own advocacy and our partner advocacy, but we also share it with election officials like the Wisconsin Elections Commission, the state legislature, and others as well.
Talking about midterm election takeaways with Eileen Newcomer, Voter Education Manager at the League of Women Voters of Wisconsin. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org on your experience at the polls. Eileen, I wonder, you know, with elections administered at the municipal level and more than 1,800 clerks doing that work. Can that mean people have different experiences at the polls in different communities?
Yes, that's so true. And even within the same community, the experience can be different. And one of the areas where we've seen this most telling is around curbside voting. So curbside voting is a right for people who have a disability, who would have trouble getting inside the polls. Every polling place is required to offer it in some way. But the trick is, like, how do you communicate the fact that that's available to voters when they're showing up and just, you know, kind of driving up next to the doors? And some communities or some polling places have greeters available, so they'll come and like chat with people as they drive up and see if they need curbside voting. Others have signs. Sometimes it says honk if you want a curbside vote or call this number. And then sometimes there's no signage at all. And so, yes, if you made it known to the poll workers that you want to vote curbside, they would accommodate. But it's the trick is, how do you let people know when you have a physical disability that would prevent you from going into the polling place to start? And one of the things that we found that I find fascinating, but also kind of troubling, is that even within one municipality, the method of how they let people know that curbside voting is available varies from polling place to polling place. So it's not even uniform across a municipality, let alone our whole state.
Is that lack of uniformity a problem, do you think?
In some aspects, it is. And then other aspects, it really is a strength. So there's always pros and cons to every, I guess, feature of an election system. But in this particular example, I think it would be best if everyone knew that it was available. And we find that voters really appreciate having greeters at the polling place, not only to provide assistance with curbside voting, but it's helpful with the flow of polling places to make sure that people know which line they need to get into. They can help make sure that people don't wait in the check-in line if they actually need to register, only to like get to the poll books and realize, oh, you actually have to go to the back of the other line and get to the front. Or if people show up at the wrong polling place and need to be redirected, a greeter can be really helpful to make sure that people don't waste their time at the wrong polling place as well. So there are other reasons why you would want to have a greeter. And these are the kinds of things that we are really fortunate to get this information so that we can take best practices like this and share it among clerks and others in the state to try and increase access to various aspects of voting.
Such detailed information and detail-oriented information and accounting there. Eileen Newcomer leads voter education for the Nonpartisan League of Women Voters of Wisconsin. The group advocates for informed and active participation in government. Join in on your voting experience in the midterms, what it was like to be a poll observer, what you encountered knocking on doors in your community, the message you conveyed about voting. 800-642-1234. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The League of Women Voters of Wisconsin works to empower voters, sponsoring events to help people engage with the political process. The group turns its attention now to the April 4th spring election, hosting a series on Wisconsin courts and judicial elections with former judges as guest speakers. Join in on all aspects of voter education, what you took away from the midterms and polling. 800-642-1234. Eileen Newcomer manages voter education for the League of Women Voters of Wisconsin and stays with us. Eileen, let's turn to poll observers. You manage the League's election observation program. Can you describe what that is and how it works?
Sure. So we've been working on this program for over 10 years now, and it started really at a small scale in focusing on several polling places in Milwaukee. And over the years, We've grown it to be a statewide program where we recruit hundreds of volunteers to go and observe polling places on election day, and also central count locations as well on election day. And so we train our observers on the rules and procedures at not only polling places, but central count, to look out for if anything is going wrong, if people are being turned away, why are they being turned away, to gather information on that. And then also to keep an eye out for what is also going well, and if there are any best practices that could be taken from one polling place and implemented in other polling places around the state as well.
Hmm. What concerns are you hearing from observers after the election?
Yeah, I think one of my top line takeaways from our observer program this year is, while there were issues with the election, you know, some good issues to have. So we did have quite high turnout this year, and that led to, you know, long lines, and, you know, wait time being longer than ideal in some polling places. There were kind of just the typical issues on election day. Things like voters not being issued provisional ballots when they were supposed to be, issues with the accessible voting equipment not being set up. But that being said, I think that there were a lot of concerns leading up to election day that we would have kind of unique challenges in this election after all of the discussion around what happened in 2020 and kind of the ongoing conversation and investigations after 2020. And so we actually were really thankful that even though there was a higher volume of observers and people interested in the election, people got to experience just how smooth and generally knowledgeable and friendly poll workers are, and the different checks and balances that we have in our system.
You find that there is growing interest from voters to become poll observers?
We do, yeah. So not only did we have quite a few new observers in our program, people who had never even volunteered with us before, we also ask our observers just to kind of keep an eye out if there are other people observing at the polls on election day. And in a typical year, our observers are the only person in a lot of, especially like rural polling sites. Mm-hmm. But we did hear from our observers that there was an increased number of other people out there observing, whether for themselves or representing a party or another organization. And I think it's kind of cool to see that more people want to learn about the mechanics of voting in Wisconsin and, you know, see for themselves, like, how does the process work?
One more quick question on this before we move on. You know, we debriefed with Wisconsin Elections Commission Administrator Megan Wolf about the midterms, and she said the state doesn't count the number of poll observers. Should the WEC keep a tally from one election to the next?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I think I haven't thought of it enough to have a strong opinion either mm-hmm. way. But I do know that when observers go to a polling place, they are required to check in with the chief inspector mm-hmm. and sign in. And so if somebody actually was really curious about how many polling or poll observers there were on any given election day, I believe the sign-in list for observers is public information, and so they could compile that list if they wanted to.
We're talking about midterm elections, the takeaways. Eileen Newcomer is with us, Voter Education Manager for the League of Women Voters of Wisconsin. You can join in with your takeaways from the midterms and what it was like to cast your ballot, 800-642-1234. Eileen, let's talk about the education piece here. Tonight at UW Oshkosh, local chapters of the League are holding an event to inform voters about Wisconsin's court system ahead of the spring election for state Supreme Court. What weight does this election carry?
Ooh, that is a really great question. We have a really high profile Supreme Court election coming up. And I think that is kind of top of mind when people think about the upcoming spring elections. But not only is it the state Supreme Court that's going to be on the ballot, it's judicial races up and down the ballot, and also local races as well. And I think I think it's really important. I feel like people do kind of think, oh, judicial elections, I don't really know how to judge a judge, and I haven't, you know, had personal experience with the court system, so maybe I don't know exactly what to do when casting my vote. And so one of the reasons why we're talking about it so early is just to help people get a sense of, you know, what to expect from our courts, what do their processes look like, and then how do they become an informed voter so that they can feel really confident that they've done their research and are casting their vote. And also, I think, to shed awareness on what are some of the issues that the courts decide on that impact just like the average Wisconsinite's life. So just to tie back to our survey that we talked about earlier, one of the things that we heard from voters is that although drop boxes weren't allowed in this last election, people really liked being able to use them, and it made voting a lot more convenient for them. And so that's the kind of thing that the courts made that decision to not allow drop boxes anymore. And that, you know, directly impacts a lot of people in our state.
Or sometimes people might think, like, well, it's clear to me why the state Supreme Court, you know, voting for a new justice is a key election, but they might not understand why local judge elections are important and what is at stake. How do you convey the down ballot voting to as part of your education?
Sure. Yeah, I think some of the different things that we've had educational series on are around sentencing and disparities in sentencing and why it would be important to have an impartial judge if you were to be bringing a case to the court system, or if, you know, for some reason you have a criminal, like you're part of a criminal trial or something like that, just like the importance of having a fair shake and how we all, you know, would want that. And another reason why I think it's important to be talking about it now is that early next month is when candidates are going to start circulating their paperwork for to be on the ballot. And I think it's really important that voters have a choice on who is going to, you know, not only represent them in local government, but also who they might see on the bench if they were to end up in court.
Let's spend a moment on turnout in the midterms. Wisconsin Elections Commission says we had one of the highest voter turnouts in the nation for the midterms, about 57% unofficially of eligible voters casting a ballot. What do you think is behind that? Why is turnout so high? Why was turnout so high, do you think?
Well, I think it's a mix of factors. I think people are more engaged in the elections than they have in past years. And but also there's been a lot of really great work from organizations, not to toot our own horn, but the League and other, you know, partners like ACLU and Wisconsin Conservation Voices, and people just, you know, talking about elections and working to get out the vote. And I think there's really important issues at stake, not only in the midterms, but also coming up. And people really, that's resonating with people, and they want to make sure their voices are heard.
In our last few moments together, what is the key thing? How does the League hope to expand participation in the future? What will make that impact?
Yeah, one of the things that we really focus on is reaching out to traditionally marginalized voters. So whether that's young people, people of color, we have a really strong coalition working on increasing access for voters who are eligible to vote but are in jail, and trying to help them get access to their ballot. And so I think the increased attention on people who don't traditionally vote, and then also making sure that voting is more accessible to everyone, is really making a difference.
Eileen, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Eileen Newcomer is Voter Education Manager for the League of Women Voters of Wisconsin. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here as we have Wisconsin's top economic development official. A study by the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities examined how states used federal pandemic funds. And when you factor in the share of federal aid received by states, Wisconsin leads the nation in dedicating a bigger chunk of federal dollars from the American Rescue Plan Act to economic development than other states. Join in on Main Street Revitalization, workforce grants, your experience running a business in these times. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Missy Hughes is Secretary and CEO of Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. Secretary Hughes, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate.
Good morning. Well, let's start with the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. It says Wisconsin has spent $1.3 billion of this federal pandemic relief on aid for businesses and workforce and economic development. What is the role of your agency in figuring out where these funds go?
Well, as we saw the pandemic hitting Wisconsin and as we moved through it, we really saw that there were a number of businesses, especially small businesses in Wisconsin, that were going to struggle to gain some of the federal dollars that were coming in, like the Paycheck Protection Act. So we wanted to make sure that those small Main Street businesses were receiving some funds to help them keep their doors open, to help them keep paying their employees. And so we worked very closely with Governor Evers to strategically invest dollars all around Wisconsin to help our businesses.
So at this point, how do you evaluate your return on investment with these dollars, with these fund allocations? What are you watching?
Well, I think the first thing that we're watching is really how the Wisconsin economy is doing. And when you look at some of the traditional numbers, like the unemployment number, which we just received last week at about 3.3%, and the labor participation rate, which is 63.5%, both of those are trending above the national average. And so, you know, as we look at these things, we try to determine how is the Wisconsin economy doing. And when we talk to our businesses, they seem very, very optimistic. They're encouraged about what they're seeing, and they're continuing to grow. And so we're feeling that the investments we've made have really positioned Wisconsin for a resilient, successful future.
With these Main Street bounce back dollars, and I'm just going to say it bluntly, $10,000 isn't much money, especially considering what it takes to set up a commercial storefront to be ready for, you know, a forward-facing business to customers. How did you come to settle on this amount for these grants?
Well, what we've really seen is that small businesses really know how to make a dollar work. So you would be surprised that around the state in all 72 counties. businesses have been able to take that $10,000 and pay their rent for a whole year, or buy inventory, or buy critical computer systems that help them at the cash register. So businesses are really able to make that $10,000 work in really incredible ways.
Are storefronts filling back up? Do you have any data on that?
The data that we have really been relying on is talking with our local communities who have been utilizing the Main Street Bounce Back Grants. And remember, those grants are meant to fill vacant spaces on main streets or in commercial corridors. And what our communities are telling us is that they're full up. They're looking for more spaces to be able to utilize these grants. And, you know, to have a community at 95, 98% capacity of their retail spaces shows that these grants are really successful and putting dollars to work.
Even in rural areas, Main Street storefronts doing well in rural towns?
I'll take the example of Washburn, Wisconsin, which is up in the Northwest. They've received over 16 Main Street Bounce Back Grants, and their Main Street is more vibrant than ever.
How about workforce innovation grants? What have you seen there?
Yeah, the workforce innovation grants are really exciting. This is $128 million that we've put to work all around the state in 27 different projects to try to remove barriers that workers are facing that's keeping them from really fully participating in the economy. So whether it's transportation or childcare, these projects are the result of communities coming to us and saying, this is our worst problem around workforce, and we have an innovative way to solve it. And so those 27 projects are up and running, and we're really excited to see the results of those.
you know, what we've heard time and again in our conversations with business people on our show is that the access to quality childcare, the affordable housing, and the broadband, three major issues that have really come to a head in these times. Are these the types of, you know, workforce innovation grants that are addressing these issues? How do you get at the heart of these issues?
Well, the governor has invested $100 million of the ARPA funds in broadband. And, you know, that seems to really be making a difference all around the state. I don't hear broadband connectivity as much of a concern as you mentioned, childcare and housing. And so at least four of the workforce innovation grants are focused on two things. One is helping to train up additional childcare workers, because that's where we're really seeing a deficit around the country. And then also helping those childcare workers have what they need to continue to be successful, like housing. We're seeing all around the state that we need to do more to increase our housing inventory, to make sure it's affordable and it's in the communities where folks are working.
How do you get projects up and running then when you have a worker shortage and supply chain issues at just getting the materials for new housing starts?
Yeah, well, I'm not going to lie. These are definitely challenges that we're facing. Two of the workforce innovation grants focus on increasing the number of construction workers we have. So in Madison at Operation Fresh and at the Boys and Girls Club, we are exposing young people to the opportunities in the construction industry, making sure they understand that building things is really cool.
We're talking about the state economy, the challenges. Missy Hughes with us, Secretary and CEO of Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. You can join in on your business, what you're experiencing, 800-642-1234. Missy, you also targeted federal pandemic aid toward minority chambers of commerce. And I think you worked to build, relationships with like the Hmong Wisconsin Chamber and the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. Can you tell us what results you're seeing in these areas?
Well, WEDC has worked with those chambers for a number of years, recognizing that the Hmong Chamber or the African American Chamber of Commerce have a direct line of sight to diverse owned businesses. And by partnering them with them, we're able to deploy resources and then they put them to work. Governor Evers piled on to that effort with more resources for those chambers, and we're working with them to understand how they're going to deploy those in their communities and how we can continue to leverage those resources and make sure that they're getting all the assistance they need, but also making sure that they have the freedom of operation to really put those dollars to work where they need to be working.
Do you see that this assistance will carry on into the future, that these dollars will be there in the future?
Well, one of the challenges with the federal dollars is, you know, it's a one-time infusion of dollars. And so what we're doing, both with the workforce innovation grants, with the work with the diverse chambers, is saying, collect the data for the impact that you're having. Let us know what businesses are experiencing, because then we can take that data and we can think about our budget surplus in Wisconsin. We can think about future investment to, again, continue leveraging those dollars and to learn from the experience that we've had to be really smart into the future.
As you look at the data coming in, has your agency's approach to incentives for retaining and growing jobs, has it changed with the state's workforce challenges or evolved in these times?
Well, what we're doing is we're really working closely with businesses. If a business comes to us and says they're interested in expanding and interested in receiving the tax credits for that, we're saying, okay, let's be conservative in your job creation estimates. Let's make sure that what you think you're going to create as far as jobs is really attainable in the particular market that we're in. And we're finding success with that conversation with the businesses. But we also want to be smart and think about how can we deploy dollars into the future that isn't so much based on job creation, but also based on other investments that the companies are making that will reinforce and build our economy.
What might those investments be?
Well, they might be making investments in renewable energy, making their businesses more sustainable, more efficient, more productive. And so we want to be supporting that. We have businesses all around the state that are modernizing, that are increasing their equipment to be able to be safer and to have our employees, our workforce of Wisconsin, involved in more technical skills rather than in, you know, lifting heavy pieces of metal and more dangerous operations. So we want to work really closely with our businesses as they consider these modernizing efforts.
Along these lines, I'm curious, do you think of financial incentive packages differently post-Foxconn and at this point in the pandemic when many businesses have received help from the federal government in some way, in some fashion, over, you know, the past 2.5 years?
Well, in conversations that we have with businesses, we recognize that while the incentives are a piece of what they're deciding on, many businesses are thinking about 50-year investments. So they want to make sure that their communities that they're moving into have a great quality of life, that the schools are good, that the people who they're bringing to that community will want to stay. And so we're really focusing on making sure that we're making Wisconsin a great place to live for the people who are here and for the people who are interested in coming to Wisconsin.
What do you think Wisconsin employers should be doing to improve their company's work culture? That's what I'm hearing in what you're saying. What should they be doing?
Well, what businesses are doing is they're thinking about things like we've talked about, childcare and housing. They're thinking about how they can support their employees during that, you know, crucial 5 to 8 year period when you've got young ones and you're trying to decide, you know, how you can make sure they have a safe place to be during the day. Companies are investing in childcare. Like a company like Quick Trip just opened an on-site childcare in La Crosse. Mm-hmm. And these are the really innovative ways that our companies are starting to think about how do we take care of our employees so that we can retain them. And companies all across Wisconsin are doing really incredible things to be as smart as they can be when it comes to retaining their employees.
Wisconsin's head of economic development, Missy Hughes, with us on business development in these high inflationary times, what Wisconsin companies are thinking and doing. Still time to talk about running your business, how you feel as an entrepreneur, what the state could do to boost your sector. 800-642-1234 to join in. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As we check in on Wisconsin business and industry, as companies think about their fourth quarter, how it will end, and what this holiday season will do for balance sheets, join in on what economic resilience means to you, what workforce or supply chain challenges you face. 800-642-1234. We have Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation CEO Missy Hughes, who stays with us. Missy, let's talk about entrepreneurs in Wisconsin. You have the Entrepreneurship Partner Grant Program. How are you trying to boost entrepreneurship in Wisconsin?
Yeah, the Entrepreneur Partnership Grant Program is one of a suite of programs that we have to really support entrepreneurs all around the state. It's important to keep in mind that entrepreneurs can be anyone who's starting a small business, like we talked about, the Main Street businesses, or somebody who's got a really interesting technology solution that they hope to grow and then, you know, spin off as a unicorn. And the Entrepreneurship Partner Grants reach out into our communities to those organizations that are helping entrepreneurs write business plans, think about how to commercialize their project. And we support those organizations all around the state, because the reality is, if you're an entrepreneur in Eau Claire or Ashland, you want to find somebody right in your community who can help you to think about how to grow your business. And so we want to make sure that those resources are available all around the state. And that's what the Entrepreneur Partnership Grants do.
What is the status on angel investors and finding that venture capital that is so critical to these startups who might have to go out of state to be able to find this financial backing when they're just getting started?
Yeah, what we're really studying is that along each phase of the entrepreneur's path, whether it's, you know, at that idea phase or as you get further along to commercialization, you need an infusion of investment. And in Wisconsin, we've got a group of angel investors that are willing to put down, you know, a few thousand dollars to help a business grow. But as you move along, it's harder and harder to find that capital that's really going to help you expand and, you know, go big with your idea. So what we want to do in Wisconsin, and we have, you know, a start at it, is to grow those venture capitalists right here, grow that amount of investment that's happening here in Wisconsin. The state is about to receive, WEDC through the state and through the federal government is about to receive a large sum of money, $50 million, that we're going to use to start a venture capital fund and encourage other businesses, other investors to invest in our Wisconsin businesses and keep them here and keep those dollars here working in Wisconsin.
It's like seed money for the seed money.
It's, you know, what really happens is that if you invest in a company, you want to be near that company. And so we see, you know, investment from Boston or investment from San Francisco saying, yeah, well, now you got to come to San Francisco or Boston. We want to keep those businesses here, because often the businesses that we're seeing are based on Wisconsin businesses. It's, you know, ag tech, agricultural technology that helps make our farmers smarter, or it's manufacturing technology that makes our manufacturers more efficient and productive. So, of course, we want to keep those businesses here, and we need to have the capital to invest in them and you know, have them have that ability to stay here.
What is the timeline for rollout on that $50 million? What do you expect?
We expect, you know, we're working with the federal government, so not everything works as fast as we like, but we expect to see that start rolling out in early 23, and, you know, we'll be able to have access to those dollars and then put them to work, hopefully within the first or second quarter of the new year.
Talking about the state economy and the challenges with Missy Hughes, Secretary and CEO of Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. You can join in along the way, 800-642-1234. Missy, let's talk specifically about some financial packages here, incentive packages. Last month, Pfizer, the financial services company, announced its intention to open a new global headquarters in downtown Milwaukee. Project, of course, contingent on incentives currently being considered by WEDC and the city of Milwaukee. What can you tell us about those incentives?
Well, I can tell you that we've been talking to Pfizer for a number of years. We've been working with them through the pandemic, and with Pfizer is currently based in Brookfield, Wisconsin. And so we wanted to keep them here as a global headquarters, but they said, you know, we want to be in a really vibrant downtown area where we can access new tech workers and, you know, we can really reflect who we are as a business. And they have chosen to stay in Milwaukee, which is really exciting. They're going to move downtown, and we expect to see about 1,000 jobs, you know, about 750 coming from Brookfield and 250 new jobs. And we'll really see Pfizer become an anchor in a good way for financial technology in Milwaukee. And we're really excited about that. I think Fiserv is recognizing the momentum that Milwaukee has right now and is jumping on that and going to contribute to it.
Just a bit more backstory here, because in 2017, Governor Scott Walker then and the state legislature, they had okayed like up to about $12.5 million in tax credits for Pfizer if it kept its headquarters here in Wisconsin. And at the time, I read about there were concerns that Pfizer was being lured away by another state. Would you say that your package now is an extension of that vision?
Well, Pfizer's gone through a lot of changes since 2017. They merged with a giant other fintech company called First Data. And so they've been working through their process for the last couple of years. They've got locations in New Jersey and Georgia. And so we definitely wanted to make sure that they were understanding that Wisconsin wanted them to keep their home here. And we successfully did that by partnering with the city and making sure that we made Fiserv understand we were here with them for the long term.
Another package we have an eye on is Salm Partners, the largest manufacturer of sausages and hot dogs in the country. And they said they're looking to move a factory in Alabama to the Green Bay area. WEDC had a tax credit for the company to have a second factory in Denmark, Wisconsin. What more are you doing to get Salm Partners here?
Well, Psalm is a great example of businesses that we support all the time at WEDC. It's a family-owned business, like you said, in Denmark, Wisconsin. They are expanding. They're doing a $35 million investment on their sausage production, and they're expanding to include almost 195 new jobs. And so we want to support them as they're thinking about that expansion, and we've done that with a $950,000 business tax credit. They make over 15% of all the fully cooked sausage in the United States, not something you would always expect to know. But we're excited that they've decided to expand in Denmark. And, you know, it's a classic Wisconsin business making sausages, and it just makes so much sense for them to be doing that here in Wisconsin.
Less than a minute left, but with Black Friday upon us, Small Business Saturday also upon us, do you have any indication how Wisconsin retailers will do this year?
Well, how they do is going to rely on all of us. So we're kicking off Shop Small Wisconsin this week. You know, and with our Main Street Bounce Back grants, as we mentioned before, we've created over 7,500 new businesses in every county of Wisconsin. And so it's incumbent on all of us as we do our holiday shopping to think of these new little businesses and to take the time. You know, it's easy to jump on Amazon or other online websites, but it's way more fun to go shopping on Main Streets and to enjoy the holiday decorations and maybe get a cup of coffee or another libation while you're doing it. So we're really focused on making sure that these Main Street businesses, especially our new ones, get as much traffic as they can. And I would rely on all of your listeners to help us do that.
Missy, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much, Kate.
Missy Hughes is Secretary and CEO of Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.